Blog Talk Radio.
Art Bell has gone to bed. Rush Limbaugh won't be awake for hours. You have arrived at the Commute Faster Energy Hour. Energy. There comes a time when all good men come to realize that that disturbing hacking cough is not caused from years of smoking because they never smoked a day in their life. No, we can thank big oil, coal, and nuclear waste for polluting the air we breathe and the water we drink. But now, bringing solutions to the monopoly-caused energy crisis. And coming to you from his remote location in exile, deep in a salt mine just outside Death Valley, kind of living out my own near-death experience, I'm your energy expert and host, Ken Rasmussen, occasionally called Late Night Leroy.
Greetings, energy fans. This is July 9, 2007, and we've got an extremely special guest on today. And because time is so limited, we're going to jump right into it. So I want to read a little paragraph I've prepared here that's just going to paint the picture of where we're at and with the guest that we have on today, Kent Snyder, who's the campaign chairman from Ron Paul 2008. Maybe we'll see some answers here and some actual things that we individuals can do. So, Kent, we now have a government that has been not only infiltrated at all levels, but is completely overtaken by criminal elements. They're hiding behind facades of religion or other phony organizations, and are thus using we naive, well-meaning public and voters to keep these guys in power. Our founders gave us a constitution to prevent this, but virtually no president or Congress or Supreme Court in the last many years has paid any attention, much less given any respect to the Constitution. This is why today I have brought on Kent Snyder today to tell us how candidate Ron Paul plans to bring America back to the back on track for obeying the Constitution and following its guidelines. So, Kent, greetings and welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I kind of said a mouthful there. You have any immediate responses, or should we go right into direct questions?
No, I think my reaction to your opening comments, I would agree with you. That is the reason for having a constitution, as you know, and I'm sure your listeners know, and that is to have a limit on government. That's one of the unique and truly, I would say, miraculous things about the Constitution, the founding of our country, is that we got our rights from God, from natural rights, and the Constitution was to be a check on government. It wasn't to be a check on the people, and that's really, truly unique. So, unfortunately, the people that you're referencing in your opening remarks don't like that. They don't want to have a restrained government, and so, therefore, they ignore the Constitution and go about their business.
Very well put. Now, I've got just two or three quick yes or no questions here that some people might think is off topic, but for anybody who's read into why our government has gotten so off track, they'll know that this is not. So bear with me, folks. This is just going to be real short. And at the risk of sounding like good old Leo McCarthy or whatever, I'm going to throw it out anyway. Has Ron Paul ever been a member of the Freemasons?
No.
Would he ever appoint any into his cabinet, knowingly?
I don't think so. I can't say yes or no. I don't think he would.
So it would not be an intentional issue that says that I have to get more Freemasons to pack
no,
my cabinet.
No.
Okay. Has he ever been a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, CFR?
No.
And would he ever turn to them for advice on appointing a cabinet member?
Yeah. No.
No. Okay.
Yeah. Say that again, because I didn't quite catch it.
Would Ron consult with the Council on Foreign Relations for advice on
recommending a new account? Yeah, now I heard
okay.
You better. No, Dr.
Okay.
Paul has criticized that organization for a long time.
Okay, and last but not least, Rhodes Scholars. Same question. Has he ever been a Rhodes Scholar?
No, Dr. Paul is not, hasn't been a Rhodes Scholar, no.
And would he go out of his way to get any appointed?
No, I don't think he'd go out of his way at all.
Okay. Yeah, now some of these things, I mean, Freemasons especially, they're going to pop up. You don't know who belongs to what at times, and some of them are outspoken on the membership, some are not. And so if somebody shows up in office that never admitted their membership up front, I'm not going to condemn anybody for accidentally appointing somebody that they may have trusted. So, okay, now that we got the ugly stuff out of the way, let's get into some more areas that I'm going to give you a little more space to elaborate on. When we look at the parade of expletive deleted characters that have marched through the White House in the last 50 to 100 years, for anybody not familiar with Council on Foreign Relations, I got to sidestep for 20 seconds here and say that organization started about 80 or 90 years ago. It began by British elitists is who established it, and then they have been masquerading themselves for the last 70 or 80 years as brilliant intellectuals who know all about world politics, and they can help any president know just what exact next step they should be doing. And their whole intent was infiltration. They all follow a globalist agenda, and that's the advice that all of our presidents, clear from, I don't know, Wilson and Roosevelt, all the way up through Kennedy, through Reagan. I mean, pick any president that you've liked in the last 100 years, look at his cabinet, and you'll see his cabinet has been saturated with CFR bozos. That disgusts me. I saw a picture once of the last 13 secretaries of state were posing in the Oval Office with George Bush. Every stinking one of them was a CFR member. Mm-hmm. Regardless of whether they were Democrat or Republican, it seems that I'm going to cut some slack here. For a presidential candidate to finally make it into the White House, you have just invested probably a few years of your life, all the resources you've got, just to get into that position. Now, once you land there, it's going to be a challenge of, okay, now I've got to appoint a cabinet that will handle every possible issue that my country's going to go through. And I need some help finding top specialists in these areas. Unfortunately, good guys, bad guys, whatever you want to say about John F. Kennedy, whatever you want to say about Ronald Reagan or anybody in between, they've all turned right around and asked the CFR for help on how do I appoint a cabinet. And we've ended up with some of the most horrendous criminals imaginable in the cabinet. And I don't have to name names here because we're so short on time. So given the fact that birds of a feather flock together, we've seen the last couple of presidents have some pretty ugly campaign managers, Stephanopoulos, Dick Morris. I mean, Dick Morris was with a prostitute at one hotel on the phone, on his cell phone with Bill Clinton talking politics while Clinton was getting done by Lewinsky. So, I mean, birds of a feather flock together. So, Kent, I want to come to you with the utmost respect here. Ron Paul has got a track record of supporting the Constitution. He's got a track record of voting pro-life. He's got a track record of protecting the U.S. citizen. How in the world did you two guys meet? And you have got a big pair of shoes to stand up with here.
Well, I met Dr. Paul in 1988. I was active in the Republican Party in Kansas, my home state at that time. And I was suspicious that the Republican Party was losing its way. I began to realize it wasn't what I thought it was, what I'd hoped it was. Dr. Paul was the Libertarian candidate at that time for president. He was in Wichita. I went down to see him. That's where he and I first met, and I've known him and worked with him off and on for many years during that time. You're certainly right. Dr. Paul's got a consistent track record on these various issues. This is his 10th term now in the U.S. House. He has voted for the Constitution, for freedom, against global government, against a variety of things along those lines, consistently and quietly and confidently on the House floor, oftentimes alone. He speaks about freedom and Constitution, speaks against some of the things that you've described already. Many, many times on the House floor, radio interviews, written about them many times, etc. So there's no question that he has a long record. We, as a campaign, are very happy and eager to compare and contrast Dr. Paul's record with any candidate, especially the Republican candidates who are in the primary here. because we contend and argue without hesitation that Dr. Paul is the only true Republican. He's the only real conservative in the race, and we are eager to have anyone take us to task with that claim, but we stand behind it. And anyone who knows anything about Dr. Paul realizes he's consistent, he's a true conservative, he's a true constitutionalist, and his record is there for all to examine.
Very good, and I agree wholeheartedly. Let's delve into income tax here, a topic that mainstream media won't touch, absolutely will not touch. Anything IRS says is gospel to them, they won't touch it. Now, if anybody has ever cracked open the two-volume set of documents that a fellow by the name of Bill Benson did, and Bill Benson, I'm not sure his current health condition, but he was handicapped, had to get around in a wheelchair when he did the research, independently traveled to every one of the 48 states, went into the state archives, got certified copies of all the original documents, and then published this in a two-volume set of books. Excuse me, getting my tongue tied here. Publishes absolute documentation that the 16th Amendment was never ratified, period. Absolute, unequivocal, undebatable proof. And yet that has been ignored by our court system, that has been ignored by our media, and most importantly, it is being totally ignored by IRS, who, the evidence I'm seeing, IRS is becoming the private mafia of whatever president is in office. We saw Clinton do it. Clinton jumped down on, I think it was WorldNet Daily, and a small movie producer out here in Southern California who had produced some expose films on Clinton's escapades. And lo and behold, he gets a horrendous tax audit. Mm-hmm. And even today, we're seeing tax protesters like Irwin Schiff can't even publish a book. His book has been banned. You have to find it on the internet. You can't buy it in a bookstore anymore. Why? Because it exposes how criminal IRS is. And then we see political prisoners. Somebody didn't like, Dr. Kent Hovind, who was a profound evangelist, giving a lot of information on creation topics, and maybe somebody didn't like him for that, but he had declared his organization a Section 508 organization. Now, if anybody doubts it, get a hold of the tax code and look up Section 508 and see what it says. Kent Hovind's organization was a Section 508. IRS said, no, you're a 501c3, and threw him in jail. They would not allow that man to present any evidence in court. Every pound of evidence that he tried to bring into court, the judge denied. It was a kangaroo court to beat all. So I challenge any listener, go look up what Section 508 is and then compare that to Section 501c3, and you'll see a world of difference there. Kent Hovind legitimately followed the law of Section 508. 501c3 is bogus. It was tampered with by a corrupt president by the name of Lyndon Johnson back when he was a senator. That's a long story. I don't want to waste any time on here. But when you look at the facts, when you look at the real laws, you see IRS is not following any of it. They write their own rules as they go along, and they don't follow their own rules. So, now back to Ron. In his debates and in his interview on bigger shows than mine, he has right at the start said he wants to kill IRS the first week. Do you have any strategy on how he's going to accomplish that?
Well, Dr. Paul has a long history of criticizing the income tax and criticizing the IRS for the reasons you mentioned, as well as others. He's introduced legislation time and time again to get rid of the income tax and get rid of the IRS. He's not bashful about that. I think most people understand it, and we think it's a swell idea for the reasons you mentioned, as well as just some of the all the other nuisances and that the IRS and the income tax pose on average Americans. He's very strong on that, and he explains why, and people should keep their own money. Yes, the IRS can be and has been a very bully organization, like a lot of other agencies, whether it's OSHA, EPA, or who knows what. And so that's just the nature of government and government agencies. They do write their own regulations. They ignore, typically, a lot of times, they ignore the law. that Congress sets forth, or even executive decisions that the president makes. They have it's their own life. They have their own entity. They have their own existence. However you want to put it, they are a life unto themselves, and that's how they act. And unfortunately, the average citizen gets caught in the crosshairs too many times, whether it's by Nixon and the IRS or Clinton or a variety of other things we don't even know about. So Dr. Paul was public about it. He's clear about it. I know as president he would push Congress for the authority. Short of that, I would think that we'd examine as president what he could do by executive decision, since the IRS is part of the executive branch. But, you know, as you mentioned, the two-volume, three-volume set of whatever the IRS code is, who knows exactly what it is? You have to spend time and time again to learn it. If you get caught in the web of the IRS and rulings and the whole bureaucracy, that can be devastating, certainly expensive, if not ruinous, to your life. And that's just, there's just no place for that, for people in America, in a free country, to have to be essentially a, you know, a slave to that sort of monster. And I mean, it's just, there's just no reason for it. So Dr. Paul's position is pretty clear, or very clear on the issue.
Tied in, right along the subject of income tax, and I hear this recited over at Fox News, and just as if it was a true mantra that they just keep regurgitating, even though it's not true, claiming that, well, how are you going to run a government without taxes? Well, any fool who says that doesn't understand the Federal Reserve System. Any fool who says that doesn't understand how to read a balance sheet. I should mention I was a stockbroker for 6 years. It's one thing I had to understand to do my job properly, was to go for the bottom line. See, all right, is this company making a profit or making a loss? Well, a brilliant individual by the name of Walter Burian and another gentleman who unfortunately I just learned recently that he passed away a couple of years ago, and that was, his name was Lieutenant Colonel Gerald Klatt from the Air Force. But anyway, he and Walter Burian had done extensive research into the, here's another acronym, CAFR, stands for Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. It's the bottom line balance sheet of every governmental organization in our country, from local municipalities up through counties, through states, up to the federal government. Walter Burian, reading this, has seen that virtually all of them have enormous surpluses. They don't need taxes. Why? Because they've got massive stock holdings on Wall Street. They're all already have an enormous income coming in from the dividends of the literally massive blue chip stocks that they hold on Wall Street. They don't need our income taxes. The only purpose of income tax is to manipulate us, we the voters. So can Ron start adding the CAFR to his campaign agenda and bring the truth of that out to the public? I know we'd all appreciate that.
Yeah, okay, I'll certainly pass that along. But it, you know, as you know, Dr. Paul talks about the Federal Reserve and why that was created and what it has done to the average American consumer and citizen, the bad, evil things that it does. He talks about that every chance he gets. The interesting thing, when you deal with the monetary issue, monetary policy in general, when you deal with the Federal Reserve, more specifically, and that sort of thing, the interesting thing that's encouraging, actually, is that when Dr. Paul mentions these issues on the campaign trail, as he did recently in Kansas City, in Iowa, in Phoenix, and in New Hampshire and other places, it's very encouraging. There's a lot of people out there who are really listening, and there's a lot of people who know what's going on, thanks to shows like yours and others, and they respond to it. And the thing that's especially encouraging, and Dr. Paul has said this so many times on the campaign trail, he's encouraged by the number of younger people. Younger people are getting wired into this story. They're understanding, and the reason is because they're beginning to realize that they are being sold a bill of goods. They realize that they are going to be burdened with the inflation tax, as Dr. Paul talks about it, the devaluation of money, the entitlement balloons that keeps growing and growing and growing. And they realize, hey, wait a minute, I don't think I can afford or will be able to afford an entire working life of all of this stuff. And they're understanding it. So from that perspective, we find it encouraging that young people and more people are understanding the issue of the Federal Reserve, inflation, devaluation of the currency, et cetera.
That is very good to hear, because we've got a generation that has moved away from the television set to the video games, and video games aren't that educational either. So it's good to see that some of them are finally getting on the internet, reading blogs, reading the genuine news sites, and learning the truth of the matter. I tell you, in my generation, when I was 19, we had Vietnam hung over our heads, and that's what made us political active in my day. This generation has got to do something, or they won't have any government at all to deal with outside of a fascist state within the next 5 years or less. So things have to be done very quickly.
Yeah, I do think that whether it's the Iraq War or the rekindling of the draft that is always talked about. This is obviously new to people who are in their 20s. They don't remember Vietnam. They weren't around during Vietnam. And they're beginning to say, well, what's this draft about? What's this empire building about? And then that connects, as Dr. Paul says, you have to, they're all hand in glove. I mean, domestic policy when it comes to the Federal Reserve is tied directly to foreign policy. You can't talk about one without talking about the other. Because as you know, and I'm sure your listeners know, it's all tied together. And so that's why if it's the Iraq War, if it's the draft, you know, my guess is that's probably one of the main reasons that young people are now coming in to the monetary issue through kind of, if you will, the back door, because they realize now what this is all about. They realize that if they are drafted and if they are sent around the world, that they're going to be sent around the world not to spread democracy, if you will, or promote freedom, but they're sent around the world to be policemen for the various multinational corporations that have interest all around the world, and they don't like it, and they shouldn't like it.
And last question on income tax. Will Ron be trying to get rid of corporate income tax as well as personal?
Well, Dr. Paul wants to get rid of as much tax as possible, and he certainly will start with the personal income tax first, but as he says oftentimes, that a tax on a corporation is always passed on to the consumer.
Exactly.
And that low taxes, regardless of the legal entity, whether it was a private individual or a legally recognized corporation, low taxes are better for everyone.
And thinking as a capitalist here, I know everybody seems to want their employer to pay for their health care, which is another issue we don't even have time to touch on today. But if you want your boss to be paying your health care plan, where's that money going to come from? And if you can get rid of corporate income tax, hey, your boss just got another raise himself, and he can now afford to share a little of that with you.
Well, on that point, I'd just like to make a comment that, you know, when people think I want to have my boss pay for my employer pay for my health insurance. Of course, that comes out of your salary. You could have gotten more. But to look at it this way, most people don't clamor to have their employer pay for their homeowner's insurance or their car insurance or their renter's insurance or anything along those lines. And, of course, I think it's pretty reasonable to say that one of the reasons we have escalating health care is because it's all third party. No one is directly responsible. The patient isn't directly responsible to make those buying decisions, to say, well, my kid has a runny nose. Do I really need to take him to the emergency room? Or maybe can I just deal with it at home or go to a doctor or something like that? I mean, you know, so people need to have all of this. They need to realize what's going on and go back to some very basic things.
Okay, thank you. And I've promised my listeners that I'd be concentrating on energy, so I've just got to focus the last few minutes of the show here on just energy. We've seen the oil companies rake us all over the coals. At the last regular job I had, I was pumping a third of my gross income into the gas tank every week just to show up at work. That's absurd. That's absolutely absurd. That's as bad as taxes, which if you add up every tax you're paying is like 60%. So if you got 60% going out in taxes and a third of your paycheck going out on in gasoline, what's left to live on?
Right.
So does Ron have any specific things he plans to do with the oil companies?
Well, he was asked that question, I think it was in the CNN debate, and he has no problem with profits. But the problem, of course, you know, that's what gives everyone an incentive to work and be productive, et cetera. But the problem is, as you, I think, are suggesting, is that so many of these corporations, whether they be oil companies or food companies or technology companies, they are in bed, if you will, with government, and the government is in bed with them. And so do you really have a free market?
The direction I'm going here is I don't want to go capping anybody's profits. If your company can make profit, more power to you. The trouble is they are acquiring these profits by criminal actions. A gentleman by the name of Lindsay Williams has produced a series of DVDs showing that we have plenty of oil in Alaska to if everybody in the United States started driving SUVs tomorrow, we have plenty of oil in Alaska to keep us going for 200 years at that consumption level. Okay, it's outrageous that we haven't been able to tap some of those fields, and I'm not sure if it's a matter of somebody saying, no, you can't, or if it's a matter of the oil company saying, no, we won't. I'm not sure of that. Right. That's what I'd like investigated. And something else I've got to interject here is, and unfortunately, this gentleman I knew personally who worked in the oil fields here in California said California has massive holdings, enough to keep the U.S. going at, again, this outrageous example here of if everybody went over to SUVs tomorrow, California alone has enough to keep this country going for 70 to 100 years. There is plenty of oil in the ground. Talk to a Texas oil man, ask him how many of his oil wells are capped, that for some reason or other nobody's pumping oil out of it. They'd rather buy it from Iraq or Saudi Arabia. What is going on here? This is criminal, and that needs to be investigated.
Well, not only do you have the supply of oil itself, as you've described, but you also, of course, have the whole refinery issue. You know, why hasn't a new refinery been approved in the U.S. in, what, the last 25 or 30 years?
Exactly.
And you have all that. So, you know, really what is going on? You know, there's some questions that I'm perplexed about, and I don't really know. I have my own personal suspicions and speculation, but there's a lot of inventive people out there who come up with all sorts of new technologies. I know that there's probably tons of resources out there that that mankind can use efficiently and effectively. And if we didn't, we probably as a species, as a race, as the creatures on this planet, we probably would have been extinct a long time ago. But man's, we have a lot of ingenuity and that works to our advantage. And sure, we make mistakes, but you know, we've got enough bright people and right people out there to do things the right way. So I'm with you. I sometimes wonder myself, really, what is going on, and that's why I'm fearful of centralized government. I'm fearful of a national or world government because I don't like centralized planning of any kind, and I would rather have decentralized government and power than centralized power on every situation.
Okay, we've got a minute and 40 seconds left on the show, so rapid fire on alternative energy. We don't need handouts, but everybody that I've met personally, face to face, seen these things running, they've got brilliant ideas out there. I know one guy directly can get any car over 100 miles to a gallon now, any car, even a Hummer. Mm-hmm. He can't get to market because he is so oppressed with government regulations and other problems. I know another vendor who's had some mysterious guys with guns show up in his face, shove automatic weapons in his face, say, you can't do that. Now, I don't know who's paying for these guys, but can we get some kind of government protection for new startups to be walked through if they want to go with a public stock or whatever so that they dot their I's and cross their T's properly and meet the SEC so SEC becomes a partner and not an enemy to deal with? Can we get some government help from that end?
Well, I don't really know the answer to that. I wish I did. And the reason is because on one hand, you know, we look for government to be the solution when in fact the government is the problem. In other words, I'm not being coy or funny with you. I mean, I really find this perplexing myself. I'm distrustful of the government for the reasons we've talked about and many others. So it's a little bit silly or kind of silly of me to also look at the same government to do sometimes these corrective measures. So I wish I had the answer. I don't, to give you a quite candid answer.
Okay. In the last 10 seconds of the show, who can somebody from a nice big organization contact at your organization to get help directly with your campaign?
The best thing to do is go to ronpaul2008.com, ronpaul2008.com. Take a look at the website, donate if you can, get involved, sign up. And once you do that, the next best thing is spread the word. The good news is the campaign is growing by the day, and it's because people are actually sharing this with other people. That's the key.
Okay, Kent, we are out of time. Thank you so much for all the questions you've answered for me today and being straightforward on everything. It's been highly appreciated, and this show will be archived and up on my website within about an hour.
Okay.
And you're welcome to spread copies of the show to anybody who ever has any questions on any of the poignant questions that I've thrown out here. And we wish you well, Kent, and we're going to be supporting you as best we can.
Very good, sir.
Again, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye now.